Thanks to Indeed for sponsoring the Apple Bits XL. Indeed knows hiring needs to be cost-effective when you're running your own business. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/AppleBits. Terms and conditions apply. Hey, everybody. It is the 300th episode of the Apple Bits XL. That's crazy. And to celebrate, well, of course, we're going to have a guest. We're going to talk about the M3 MacBook Air on the 300th episode. We're going to also talk about everything that happened behind the scenes with the Apple Car project, because Bloomberg's Mark Gurman is in the house for this episode. So everybody, you know what time it is. Let's get to the show. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. It's the Apple Bits XL's 300th episode. Woo! Everybody, Brian Song here, your host, doing the most. Wow, 300 episodes. Thanks to all of you all for keeping us going strong. So we've got a good one this week. But before we get to that, of course, just a little bit of business. This podcast is brought to you by you. Patreon.com/Brian Tong is how you can support this podcast and all of my content. It starts at $2 per month, $5, which is like a cup of coffee per month, if that's the value I give you, $10, $25, or the $100 platinum Apple level. And what does it get you? Early access to content, rewards at different levels, and a completely ad-free version of the show. Plus, being a Patreon subscriber and supporter, we just awarded one of our great, great Patreon supporters, Rob Deloach, with an Apple Vision Pro. It actually happened. I teased it to you all. We actually did it. So that's, you know, some of the things that we do, as well as our monthly live streams and just a bunch of different activities. We have a Closure Rings challenge going on right now for a limited edition Closure Rings hat. So all types of stuff happening. Patreon.com/Brian Tong is how you support. Also, I still love hearing from y'all. If you want to be a part of the show, which adds another level of flavor, all you got to do is record a voice memo, send it into applebitsshow@gmail.com. That's applebits with a Z, your name, where you're from, what you want to talk about it. You call in, you send it in, and we play it. All right, so for this 300th episode, we are going to do an M3 and MacBook Air little review talk, and then, you know, it's always fun when you think about 300 episodes, looking back, and what better time to look back to the recent future of everything that happened with the Apple Car project. So here you go. Special guest Mark Gurman and myself talking about all those things. All right, everybody. Special guest, the Apple scoop du jour man himself, Mark Gurman, in the house, coming back another time. Thanks so much for joining the podcast, Mark.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here. We've got a ton to talk about, so I'm glad to be able to run it all down with you, as always.
Yeah, you know, I think the first thing that obviously you've done so much work digging into and getting the information about the Apple Car story, which I think is really fascinating. We're going to talk about that in a second, but I think what we should first talk about is an actual product that is out, and we're talking about the M3 MacBook Airs. I posted my review on my channel, so people that are listening can check that out. Really, a very incremental upgrade, a processor boost, the changing to the less fingerprint surface with the anodized seal of the midnight color, and then the ability to do dual display support for two 5K displays. Pretty much you could connect to Apple Studio displays. But other than that, yes, there have been people that have dug into the drives and said, okay, the hard drive, the solid state drive, is faster than it was last year's. I think a base model was criticized. I mean, if people really want to get into the weeds about it, but they bump up the actual speed of those disk drives. But overall, if you have an M1 and if you're not doing any media, I don't think you need to upgrade. If you have an M2, unless you really want the latest cat's meow and you really need the graphics improvements in the M3, you can upgrade. But this is really, for me, another Intel Mac base user, or maybe swaying people over from Windows to come over type device. But it's hard. I wouldn't upgrade personally.
Yeah, no, I mean, this seems like a really, really minor spec bump, right? So significantly more minor even than the transition from the M2 MacBook Pro to the M3 MacBook Pro back in October. What they've done here is they've just moved from the M2 chip to the M3 chip. So you're getting about, what, 10 to 12% boost in CPU performance. You're getting a little bit better graphics. You're getting ray tracing. So if you're doing gaming on there, it's a bit of an upgrade. But like you said, I don't think people are going to see noticeable day-to-day improvements coming from an M2 machine. You might see some nice improvements coming from an M1, but I don't think anything that would be worth actually paying, you know, the $1,000, $1,100, $1,200 plus to actually upgrade. I think if you're someone who wants to get a 15-inch MacBook Air, and if you're coming from an M1 13-inch MacBook Air, now is the time to upgrade. Remember, the 15-inch Air came out with the M2 back in June. So what is that, 9 months ago at this point? Mm-hmm. So, you know, could be a nice upgrade for people coming from that form factor. But certainly, this is not a needle mover in any way. But like you said, it's a really good machine if you're coming from a non-Intel Mac. You know, if you look at all their literature on these things, they're still comparing to the Intel Macs. They're comparing to some of the M1 Mac offerings. So really no M2 to M3, right? Remember back in the day when they would compare, you know, the A9 to the A10 or the A6 to the A7, those one generation leaps. We don't get those one generation leaps anymore on Apple Silicon. Obviously, there's the law of large numbers. There's the laws of physics that make upgrades more incremental than they were, you know, a decade ago. But certainly they're continuing to push the envelope here on new silicon. They're moving more quickly than they did in the M1 generation to get these 3-nanometer chips out there. You know, for my purposes, taking a look at what's next, certainly an M3 version of the Mac Mini that should be out in the second half of this year, right? What are they going to do with the Mac Pro? There's a new Mac Studio for sure in development as well. So you would anticipate an M3 Max version of that. Certainly, they're already working on the M4. They're working, and I talked about this in my car question and answer session on Bloomberg the other day. They've just started formal development of the M4 MacBook Pro line. I wouldn't anticipate that before the very end of this year, though, maybe the beginning of next year. But they're moving between generations pretty quickly, right? Mm-hmm. It's been 3.5 years since they rolled out the M1, and we're already pretty deep, you know, we're sort of near the end zone here of the M3 generation. So they're moving quickly, and maybe that's the story here.
You know, we know that this is the first Apple product that I can recall in the actual website and specs where they actually finally used the two letters AI. I don't know if you saw this or, you know, caught on this, but even at WWDC, remember Apple avoided using the word artificial intelligence. Apple avoided saying AI outright. But with this MacBook Air, they've actually called it out that, oh, with our neural engine, it can handle AI tasks. I don't know if you know this from what you've heard or not, but we've seen how the processing power, yes, it is pretty incremental. I've got to imagine that the neural engine is maybe where they're going to start focusing a little more if they really are pouring resources into a new approach that is centered around AI. Do you have any thoughts on that or maybe things that you might have heard?
Some thoughts. One, you know, there's nothing new in this MacBook Air from an AI perspective compared to the MacBook Pro that predates it, maybe even compared to the neural engine, you know, in the prior generation, at least tweaks of significance, right? These are all minor tweaks. So this is a pure marketing play. The stock market loves the idea of artificial intelligence and Apple and all these companies getting into AI. Shareholders, investors, they love that. From a marketing standpoint, you know, all the PC companies are advertising their stuff as AI first and AI ready. Obviously, Microsoft is adding that Copilot button to the keyboard on new Windows machines. And so, you know, Apple has sort of a responsibility to play into that game and say, hey, we're here too. Mm-hmm. But the funny part is they're saying that they have these AI features. They really have got an AI brain without any Apple designed features of significance around AI, certainly that people care for in the year 2024. They've basically taken the approach of arguing that everything they've already got is AI and that the consumer doesn't understand what AI is. And if you don't think Apple has been playing in AI for a decade, you're wrong. But the reality is I'm not sure that the consumer is wrong. I'm not sure that these other PC companies are wrong. I'm not sure that the critics are wrong. I just think that Apple is being stubborn and not admitting that the AI of 2024 has lapped the AI of 2011 when they first rolled out Siri, right? Apple is behind, and they're not going to admit that they're behind until they release their upgraded tools later this year.
Yeah, you know, I remember there was a time, well, I think for years, a lot of people have generally been frustrated with Siri, and there's trade-off that comes that we know about Apple's privacy policies and how they don't have they don't give unfettered access to everything that comes through. So that's one of the limitations, but also still Siri development, just the architecture of how it was built, not really being able to handle multiple queries, even from the start of it. It was, they actually were ahead, and then everyone really poured those resources. We see what Google's doing and what they have been doing. And so Apple has been behind from a consumer front-facing AI and assistant perspective. Now we'll see what happens at WWDC. And yes, you're right. Apple will say, look, all the machines and computers and devices we've had have been running forms of AI in the background for, like you said, a decade or so. That's always been known. But now there's this new push about consumer front-facing features that we can use and access. We've seen how Google has, quite honestly, in my opinion, knocked it out of the park on making or labeling AI features that we can actually use that actually do have benefit to the consumer. And now it's being integrated into Android as a platform. Samsung's S24 Ultra is now getting it. So I'm just curious to see how Apple is going to shape their message around AI. How is it going to be approachable for, are they going to make an AI feature that you and I are going to use? Are they going to be able to bring a feature that my mom uses? Because my mom hears the word artificial intelligence or AI. She's like, what? You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how they approach it to what is a very broad general consumer audience and how they pitch it and what those features could be that are compelling enough where we can say, because I don't, the stuff that I've seen from Google, I think it's like just hits that sweet spot of usability, consumer friendly. If you don't want to use it, you don't have to. But what will Apple do? I'm really curious to see. I think WWDC this year is going to be really important to them from that perspective, because I was hoping last year that we'd see some level of AI features, and we really didn't.
Yeah, I agree with you. What's so interesting is I think Apple is so behind in AI that this year is just going to be the beginning. I don't think they're going to come out with a massive suite of new AI features this year. I think there certainly is going to be a lot of them, but I think you're going to see the features roll out incrementally over the next few years. I'd also be surprised if all the AI features came to the Mac this year. I think they're going to start off with the iPhone, probably the iPad. But I think that next year might be the year when a lot of these AI features start coming to the Mac as well. So I think it's going to be a multi-year roadmap of new AI features. And I wouldn't be surprised if they say that these features are going to take a couple of years to roll out and get better over time. Maybe some of them will even be labeled as a beta. That would be risky, given that the stakes are so high for AI right now. But certainly, I don't think that this year is the end-all be-all for Apple in terms of AI. To me, what's most surprising is how they had such a head start in AI and integrating AI into consumer software and hardware, maybe a 4 to 5 year head start. It feels like maybe they're 4 to 5 years behind. And so they've been lapped big time.
Yeah, and you know, they hired, I don't know how long has it been. Has it been 4 or 5 years? It feels like, I mean, COVID messes with my brain, but they hired John Gianandrea from Google, poached him directly to kind of influence and push us in. I remember when he was first hired, I said, hey, we aren't going to see anything right away, but I thought we'd see something in maybe 3 years, right? But we still haven't seen anything fundamentally change from even Siri's perspective. I know we did get multiple timers, I think, within the past year now, finally.
but that has nothing to do with.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, beyond that, it'll be interesting to see. So, you know, like we jumped over to AI, but I just want to get back on with the MacBook Air. If you're interested, it starts, the 13-inch model starts at $1,099, and then the 15-inch M3 version starts at $1,299. They do start with 8 gigs of unified memory and 256 gigs of storage, but can be configured up to 24 gigs unified memory and then up to 2 terabytes of storage, depending on what flavor you want. So, but incremental upgrades in AI, I mean, AI. I love, it made me laugh when you talk about investors do care, because it's the buzzword. It's the topic that, what are you doing for the future of the health of your company? If you don't have an AI plan, what's going to happen to you?
Well, they certainly have an AI plan. The question is if it's good enough and if it's really going to excite consumers and if it's really going to bring in more revenue, right? Like, how are you going to make money off of AI? I'm not immediately seeing any possibility of them making money off of AI specifically. I mean, they could charge for Siri and certain AI features, but I think that the Siri brand and the idea of Apple and AI has become so tarnished that not as many people as Apple would like would be willing to pay for their AI features. And I would anticipate, I'm not hearing this, this is just my own personal speculation, they'll probably have to, you know, kill the Siri name if they're really going to do such a big reboot. I think that brand is just really in bad shape because of the poor performance of Siri over the last decade plus.
No, that's exactly, I've literally said exactly that a month ago. I said, you know, it sounds kind of crazy, but if they're going into this whole new AI direction and generation, that they should get rid of the Siri name. It's, you know, I mean, for do sure. People, I don't think people look at it positively. Is there brand equity with Siri and Apple? Yes, no. Because we've said Siri for this all these years, but I just don't think the community looks at it that positively.
Yeah. I agree. Now here's the, you know, the flip side of it. They spent so much engineering money and so much engineering time on getting that wake word, right? I'm not going to say it, popping the hay from the wake word. And so it's like, if they did all that fine tuning and research and development and testing and recording and stuff to just drop the word hay, they'll have to keep that wake word around, but maybe
it's going
to
stay. It's going to stay.
It is the wake word. Yeah, fine.
I think it's going to stay. You know, you were talking about, and this is a good transition, you're talking about, you know, could AI be another revenue stream? And really now it's more of like a technology catch-up play that is layered onto the ecosystem that they need to have just from a competitive standpoint. But when you talk about revenue streams, one product that we all know could have been really helpful to the revenue was the Apple Car. And I've got to say, first of all, Mark, your reporting on this has been damn impressive. So much detail that no one is getting anywhere else. And so I wanted to commend you because I was, you know, we're really living vicariously through all these nuggets. So I'd love to kind of hear from you following this story. There's so many things that have happened. I know your recent newsletter talked about some of the different car designs, but I first kind of wanted to find out from you, as the story was evolving, what did you find, I guess, maybe the most compelling or thing that stuck out to you during this discovery process of kind of breaking down what happened with the Apple Car project?
You know, in a lot of ways, went into the idea of them canceling the car project, believing that this was purely a matter where Apple was locked in on doing a level 5 car. The technology was not ready, so they decided they're no longer going to pour resources into something that could be a pipe dream for 5 years, 10 years, or potentially, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. Came out of my research thinking, you know, Apple really screwed up here. A lot of the problems have stemmed from indecision. There were so many times throughout the Apple Car process where top Apple executives, including Tim Cook, couldn't make a decision one way or another, either to kill the project earlier on, to put more funding in the project earlier on, to go full throttle into level 5, maybe go full throttle into level 3, go full throttle into no to very basic autonomy. And I think that indecision delayed development time, delayed resources. I think that indecision led a lot of really great people on the project who could have been huge helps to the project to leave over the past decade. So that was particularly interesting. The other interesting thing, and I think we may have talked about this when this happened, but they sort of pivoted the Apple Car about a year ago, or that would be no less than a year ago, probably within the last 4 to 6 months, from a level 5 project to a level 2 project, which would put the autonomy on par with a Tesla, sort of when they shut the door on the idea of them being able to get level 5 out the door. And they still, partly because of indecision, partly because of the inherent economics of the car business, they still weren't able to put their, you know, foot on the gas, so to speak, and go full throttle on a level 2 car. And I think that Apple not entering the car business is changing the course of their future. Mm-hmm. I think that there's no clear new next big category. where they can really reinvent themselves and grow as a company for the foreseeable future, for decades to come. I don't think coming out with a new widget, whether that's, you know, AR glasses or, you know, a new home product, you know, these are all products that are all based on the original iPhone, right? The iPhone, the iPad is an extension of the iPhone. The Apple Watch is an extension of the iPhone. The AirPods are an iPhone accessory. The Apple Vision Pro is really cool, but it is a different take on the iPhone, so to speak. The only wholly new thing would have been a car, and not being able to reinvent yourself on the go is definitely a concern that I would have as if I was an Apple shareholder or an Apple investor, if I was an Apple employee. So it is a bit concerning that they weren't able to get this done, level five or not. I think that a level two car would have been incredibly compelling. I have a Tesla, but I think an EV with the same set of autonomy features, with an Apple design interior and exterior and Apple services and iPhone integration, would have been a really hot car. And I think they would have sold a ton of them and would have been hugely successful. So it is mind-boggling why they decided not to go down that road. You know, there is the argument that the consumer or the car business is crushing in terms of margins and profitability. You've seen what's happened to Rivian, Tesla, Lucid over the past several quarters. You know, a lot of those companies have been struggling. And so, you know, Apple could decide not to go down that road because of the economics of the business. But, you know, what else, but someone else close to the project or someone close to the project told me, was like, you know what else is a really tough business? Consumer electronics. And mm-hmm. We make a ton of money on that. So Apple figured out consumer electronics. I think they could have figured out the car business. And so when people are still asking me, like, do you think the car's really canceled for good? I think the idea of Apple developing its own car is absolutely canceled for good. It is not, there is no return there as long as Tim Cook is CEO. You can't just rebuild what you spent so many years building up after knocking the whole thing down, right? It took years to build up. It took one video conference to knock it all down. And you know, so to speak, obviously Moore was involved in those decisions. They actually had months of discussions with the board and the executive team about it. But the only way into the car business at this point, I think, is twofold. Going really strong with CarPlay, mm-hmm. trying to monetize CarPlay, finding a way to get built in even deeper into the car operating system, or building that car operating system for, you know, all the car makers. The other idea is building a car maker and building from there, right? Or buying a car maker and building from there. But, you know, Apple almost seems allergic to integrating big companies. And so, you know, could they buy Rivian on paper? Sure. Could they buy, you know, a Ford or a GM or, you know, a BMW? Yeah, maybe, right? But that would be really difficult for Apple to integrate. It's not the type of acquisition they normally do. Tesla, a decade ago, would have been pretty hot. But these days, you know, integrating a car company at the scales that these current car companies operate at would be very difficult.
Yeah, you know, I think even I 100% agree with kind of this whole idea of, is the Apple Car project dead? I mean, we saw them once they started showing us CarPlay, that next generation of CarPlay, customized for different car brands and kind of taking over a car system. It felt like there was and you know, like you said, and you reported, there were a lot of up and down moments of indecision of, are we going to do a car system? Is it going to be an autonomous car system? Is it going to be a car with a steering wheel or not? Is it going to have a steering wheel, right? There were so many ups and downs, but that moment when CarPlay was shown off, I got excited for whatever future car I was going to own because I wanted CarPlay on it in that way. And B, it told me, either they're teasing this because this is going to be their next car, or they're teasing this because there is no car. That's what it felt like in that moment.
Well, they got lucky, right? They got lucky. First of all, that CarPlay had been in development since around 2020. So well ahead of when this car project really, you know, fell apart in recent months. I think the idea was there's a few components in here. One, you want tons of people have cars. 99.9% of people, even when the Apple car comes out in the universe where it was a thing, wouldn't have an Apple car. What's the best way to market the Apple Car to people who don't have an Apple Car? Giving them an Apple-like experience in their car, giving them a taste of what you would get in a full-blown Apple Car. The other portion of it is we want to own the whole automotive market, but we can't sell an Apple Car to everyone. Not everyone's going to be able to buy one. Not everyone's going to want to buy one. So we own, you know, our cars, but we also own a nice piece of the other cars that are on the market, and we have a foothold everywhere, right? The third piece is data, being able to use that special CarPlay to gather data and help inform their own development of a car. So I think there were multifacets to it, and they got lucky that it just so happens that that new CarPlay is rolling out in the same year that they nixed their car.
All right, everybody. Hey, let's take a breather to thank the sponsor of this podcast, Indeed. You know, we're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And something that I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy with Indeed's hiring platform. Candidates you invite to apply are three times more likely to apply to your job than candidates who only see it in search, according to U.S. Indeed data. We get you one step closer to the hire by immediately matching you with quality candidates, and listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/AppleBits. Just go to Indeed.com/AppleBits right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/AppleBits. Terms and conditions apply. Need a hire? You need Indeed. Visit Indeed.com/AppleBits to start hiring now. Can we talk about, you just report about some of the ideas or some of the concepts, the actual models or what these cars were potentially going to be like that were coming to market. If you could just kind of tell some of these listeners, because it was kind of fascinating. Like when I read it, I felt like, oh, Apple was, to your point, Apple was trying to build something different, but they got caught up, like you said, in this idea of level five autonomy, which we've seen today, no car manufacturer has been able to crack that nut. And quite honestly, we're not going to get, to me, I don't think we get to true fully autonomous vehicles doing everything until each car, there's some sort of standardization where each car has some sort of a beacon or chip that can see what the other cars around it are doing. So they're working essentially in symphony. We've seen kind of concepts and talks about this at CES. But yeah, you can have a camera system on your car, but what's better, what would really make this safer and more predictable is if each car could actually see and kind of know what the cars were doing around you. I don't know if we'll ever get there, at least, okay, how about this, in our lifetime, probably.
It's a good idea. It seems impossible.
Right. Exactly, right? It seems like a holy grail.
Cars for, right?
And also, we've seen this just from a software standpoint, or even from a VHS versus beta or Blu-ray versus HDR, a standard. You know, for a company to even say, oh, we're going to equip our fleet of cars so that, let's say, all Teslas can see each other, there's no benefit for them to do that, right? There's just not. So, but anyways.
Well, in LA, we do.
true. But anyways, I'd love to hear kind of like, you probably even have more nuggets that are in your head about these different car concepts, but maybe some of them that stuck out to you the most.
Well, you know, the thing that stuck out to me the most was that a lot of their prototypes looked like the Canoe lifestyle vehicle, right? A slightly smaller version of that. Other prototypes not having a front or back windows until they added the steering wheel and pedals. Well, here's one interesting nugget. So one of the early designs looked just like the Volkswagen microbus ID Buzz.
Oh, yeah.
From 2017. But Apple's design was before 2017. And so apparently, you know, I'm not going to give the guy's name, but, you know, there was a big wig on the Apple Car project early on who came up with that sort of ID Buzz like design. And then he left Apple for Volkswagen. And then a couple years later, they introduced that concept. So it seems like, you know, he brought that concept to Apple. Apple didn't, you know, push the button on that. And then he, you know, sort of reinvigorated that concept back at VW. So, you know, that was a little interesting. The other thing is how many people inside Apple were sort of, you know, against this car project. But maybe that's sort of the ingredient here, is there's a lot of naysayers lately at Apple from what we've talked about. You know, the Apple Vision Pro, there were a lot of people inside the company who were very skeptical of what Apple was building there. For the Apple Car, a lot of people in the company skeptical of what Apple was building there. I'm not sure people were terribly skeptical about the Apple Watch. I think a lot of people were just on board with the Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure there was a lot of skepticism around the iPad. I think there was a lot of excitement internally about the iPad. You know, the iPhone is interesting because if you remember, there was the, you know, two competing ideas for how the iPhone should operate. Should it be based off of a touch version of macOS, or should it be based off of the iPod interface? Mm-hmm. And obviously the iOS, macOS, you know, blend sort of, not sort of, absolutely won out, which was clearly the correct decision. I'm not sure anyone was skeptical about the iPhone. I just think there were some sort of different approaches, different camps within the company before everyone sort of went down a unified path for the actual development of the product. So it is interesting how much skepticism there has been internally about, you know, certain directions that Apple is taking the company. You know, a little bit of a tangent here. The Apple Vision Pro is certainly cool. I love it. I feel like I'm using it a little less than I was before, but certainly it's not in a drawer. I certainly love the device a lot. I think it's getting better and better. The app situation is beyond disappointing.
Yeah.
I think it's been going very slowly. I don't think that it's going to turn into the future of Apple. I mean, I think it's going to be a component. I think it's just going to be one widget. You know, they call it the stool, one leg of the stool. You know, at some point, if they're able to get it into an AR glasses form factor, that'll be really cool. But, you know, I just, you know, if I'm Apple, I'm a little worried about what's the future of the company, because, you know, you can do, you know, 15 watches in a row. You can do another 15 iPhones in a row. You can do 100 more Macs. You can do some new iPads, but you certainly, you know, you need something new to hang your hat on. And the car was that. And that's obviously not going to happen. So it is a little disappointing and jarring in some respects, because Apple is a company that, you know, builds itself around these big hit products. And
that's not
the case right now.
I mean, even, you know, you talk about the Apple Vision Pro, and I'm with you. You know, I felt like, right now, I think are we about a month, a little over a month since it came out, and there hasn't been that next surge of stuff. We know that Vision OS 1.1 came, and this does, you know, help with some slight improvements, like you get improved, the persona has been improved, but this is not anything ground shaking from an OS perspective. Obviously, we're going to assume we're going to see a lot more in at WWDC, but right now, you know, for me, I still really love the thing. It has become my ultimate travel buddy on long flights. That's probably its most killer app application for me today. But from home, I have it in my living room. I pick it up maybe like half an hour, jump in like at the end of the day, just because it's just so fun. But I'm not like working on it. I'm just jumping in there because it's fun. It's just a fun experience. But I'm feeling like, where's this next surge of like next generation apps, right? You're okay when it first launches with, okay, show me some concepts, but, you know, we're waiting for even, I mean, here's something small, but Apple is the owner or is the broadcaster of MLS. And so I got really excited seeing the NBA app. It was really exciting. You could see all these different, you know, screens and move them around. Apple's launch with MLS this season was just watch it through the Apple TV player. I would have felt like this would have been a ripe opportunity as someone who watches MLS to give me some app that has some level of functionality like the NBA app where I can watch multiple screens. I can see real-time stats. But no, it's, I know they're working on it, but when you have the property and you have the sport, you kind of feel like you would launch that season knowing this product was coming out basically a month before MLS started again this year with something significant. And even that hasn't happened, right? So that's, I know there's all these different departments and groups, but you think about moments where you see the connective tissue should be there that isn't there yet and feels like it should be there for a launch product. That's a little concerning. I'm sure there'll be some sort of an app down the road, but even their sports app, it is handy, but it doesn't feel like it was a fully baked app and was kind of felt like it was released a little early.
It's not fully baked at all. I mean, it's the most bare bones sports app I've ever seen. And they're going all in on the idea of it being bare bones. The question is, was it always meant to be bare bones? Or did they just want to do something already and they didn't have much more than the bare bones approach? And so they've just decided to market it around that, right? Mm. What do they call it? Scores at the speed of sports? I mean, come on, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do use it, but it's... I only use it because of the quick link.
It could be a feature in the sports section of the Apple News app.
Yeah,
the real play is to move the sports section from the Apple News app into the standalone sports app and move the sports content from the Apple TV Plus app and move everything into the sports app and have one unified application for sports instead of having to tap between three different apps, which, by the way, is the entire antithesis of how Apple presents itself in the first place.
Yep, the two clicks. It ain't two clicks, that's for sure. So
certainly.
So you know, you with the whole car thing, I think you really make a great point. What is like right now, if we're saying what's the future of Apple, the thing is that they have such, and this has always been the case, we know this, they have such an ecosystem and a loyal user base that you know continues to upgrade, even if it's at a slightly slower pace. You know, we don't see people upgrading their iPhones nearly as often as maybe we did 5-6 years ago. Now, I feel like a lot of people are keeping their iPhones, the general consumer, not the tech space, but the general consumer is keeping their phone for 3, 4, 5 years before they make an upgrade. But they still, you're all, what, Brian? Yes.
Here's the thing. I mean, like, I have an iPhone 15 Pro. It's 2024. Let's just be honest here. How big of an improvement is the iPhone 15 Pro? Pro over the iPhone 11 Pro from 2019?
Well, better camera. Your phone is your camera. Your camera is your phone.
Yeah, but is it dramatically better? Like, does it feel feel like the iPhone 11 Pro and the iPhone 15 Pro are 5 years apart?
No. I literally did a photo comparison and it's like, it reminds you how good these phones are already. And that's, we know, right? Have phones plateaued to, I would argue, I won't say they've absolutely plateaued, but yeah, they're definitely kind of in a holding pattern. We're just processing the camera.
Everything has plateaued. Processors have plateaued. iPhone camera performance has plateaued. iPhone design has plateaued. Apple Watch capabilities have plateaued, at least for the time being. I mean, everything is plateauing. The iPad is about to take a big leap.
Yeah.
Right. That's for sure. But like a lot of the business is plateauing. AirPods is actually going to take a big leap this year because they're going a little bit down market in terms of pricing. Maybe not pricing, but in basically replacing the lower priced models with higher end earbuds potentially at the same price. So, you know, this year we'll be big on the Apple Watch, we'll be big on the AirPods, we'll be big on the iPad, but the iPhone is going to be another minor year. It's going to be another minor tweak. And so I certainly think that they can't be comfortable with this. And the car was really an answer to all these questions. And that answer is gone. Now they have to find a new answer. And the question is, what is that?
The hard part about the car thing, though, like, I mean, and we've talked about this, is it wasn't like they were going to be, yes, it would put a flag in the ground. But to your point and what we've talked about, the economics, the margins on the car, to me, the EV market, that general consumer, it's pretty saturated from a standpoint of, I look at myself, okay, I just got a Rivian R1T. If Apple released this car in 2026, I will tell you right now, I'm not, as an owner of a car that I invested in a lot in and I love, I was not compelled to buy, even sight unseen. You know, sometimes you're like, ooh, I'm really curious what Apple's doing. Like, I want to get it. I'm not, right. I was not compelled to be like, I'm going to get rid of my car and buy an Apple car in what the idea was, maybe 2026. That was not compelling to me, no matter what they did, you know? And so because, and yes, there's people that lease their cars, all right, that are going to get whatever car they want. But there's a lot of people that don't lease their cars. And guess what? There's a lot of people that aren't in the business of buying a car and every 2 or 3 years either. So they're, from a fundamental just economic standpoint, I mean, that's really challenging. Tesla has completely, you know, taken over that space from a standpoint. And now we have the other car manufacturers who are better at making cars now coming to the market with a product that's already there. Rivian's already there, you know, Lucid and Polestar and all those aren't, you know, these are not brands that are top sellers, but you talk about the Fords, you know, the Nissans, the Hyundai, all those companies, they have EV solutions and gas solutions. No matter what we say, I think it would have been really hard for Apple to make a significant dent even in the first 2 or 3 years of their project. And they had already spent $10 billion on it, and they weren't even at a point where they could comfortably release any type of car. Still, they were kind of forced by the board to say, hey, you need to commit to a date now, right? Based on your reporting, you need to commit to a date. Otherwise, we're not going to support this. Like, we should move off of it. They were forced to even like get to that point, because who knows, if they weren't pressured by then, the Apple car project might still be going on for another 3 years without a product. Arguably.
Maybe so. Maybe so. I still think an Apple car at a level two autonomy would have been really compelling.
To your point, you're right. If they went into it, not trying to kind of revolutionize the car autonomy, clearly they predicted or thought that that whole situation would get resolved in 10 years, right? That's the thing. And so they leaned on that, and they were working on developing their own system, but it didn't happen. And so if, like you said, they committed to level two, just what a Tesla could do, then we would have probably seen a car today.
It went too far down the road of the level five approach, and it was too hard to scale back to level two by that point, given how much had been invested in the level five approach.
Like, they were like still trying to get to that holy grail and just kind of pouring it in and keep on going, but they couldn't get there, right?
I still think they should have waited it out and tried to do something in level two or level three. So
yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, I can't say, when no one knows, because it's still not determined yet. We don't know if Apple Vision Pro is the future of Apple until they come up with a more affordable version that we can find out if consumers will really jump on that version, right? I mean, That's right. A great product. The foundation is there, but we actually don't know if consumers really want it once it's at a price that they're willing to be like, okay, I can really make a choice of if I want to get that or not. That
there's a lot of work that needs to be done, including the price, most importantly, getting that lower end version out. That will make it more mainstream, and maybe that can, you know, shake some leaves. But I still don't see the Vision Pro ever becoming an iPhone sized business, ever.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you. I think, to be honest, it's that idea of a more scaled down, that middle tier AR glasses that talks to your phone as the CPU and is not as this big bulky headset. I mean,
but I don't think Apple wants to do that either.
Right?
They're go big or go home.
Go big or go home. Well, they went home with a car. That's for sure. Exactly. And it is sad. Like, I would have loved to see it. If only, you know, later down the road, all these years, there's going to be renders and stuff that's going to come out. It's going to be kind of fascinating to see. I mean, you've probably already seen some stuff, so. All right, Mark. Hey, I'm going to let you go, buddy. Thank you so much for hanging out. You know, it's always good. And, you know, iPads coming up soon. We don't officially know when, but we'll kind of wait on that. But it sounds like product category, exciting new changes, but how many people really need a new iPad?
I got to tell you, I'm very excited for it personally.
I am.
For me, the Vision Pro has taken up a lot of my iPad use cases, but
yeah, me too.
We'll see in April how it all shakes out.
All right. Ooh, he's saying it, everybody. April. All right. Mark, thanks so much, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. And until the next one. All right.
It's my pleasure.
All right. See ya. All right, everybody. So there you go. Mark Gurman of Bloomberg with all the details about the Apple Car project. Just a fascinating thing. And then we talked about artificial intelligence and AI. I mean, how it was the buzzword last year. It's going to be the buzzword specifically this year for Apple. And then you got Apple's spring launch with potential iPad Pros, which we expect to see. Maybe the larger screen iPad Air all coming in that April timeframe. We'll wait and see. And then WWDC lines up where all the new OSs are coming out. And I'm really curious to see what is going to happen with Vision OS in 2024 to move that product forward. And of course, what is going to happen with iOS and all the AI features, and where are we going next? Because to me, losing the Apple Car is a big deal down the road in the near immediate future. It's not going to impact them as well, but I said it when we were talking to Mark. Apple's ecosystem and tentacles and reach are so deep. Yes, a car would help, but by how much? Because of margins? Maybe not anytime soon. So it is a bummer, though. It didn't happen, and I think we'll just see how them missing on the Apple Car really affects them 5 years and 10 years from now. All right, everybody, that is going to do it for this week's show. Remember, if you want to support my content, patreon.com/Brian Tong is how you do it. But until next time, we'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. It's the Apple Bits XL, baby. Peace.